Welcome to the Grappling with Life podcast. Today we are joined by Adisa Banjoko, all the way from California, Bay Area, San Francisco. I had to write this down. Adisa, also known as Bishop, so we'll be referencing him as Bishop on this podcast. We did try and get him on while he was in the UK, but we had to get him on. You know, as soon as I heard his story, I thought, you know, he definitely needs to, we definitely have the conversation. So without further ado, Adisa, Bishop, welcome, man.
Yo, thank you so much. Salam, man. It's good to be on here. I'm really sorry that we weren't able to connect while I was in the UK doing the, you know, lightweight grappling tour. It was super fun. And I love the UK immensely. But it's good to be on here today. It's an honor.
Barakalofik, man. So firstly, I thought, you know, instead of me introducing you, I'd rather you introduce yourself, because I actually want to hear it myself. So we haven't had the pleasure of actually speaking in person or even speaking at length. So
yeah.
This is good for me as well.
Alhamdulillah. So, I mean, the short of it is, you know, my name is Adisa. My nickname is Bishop. I'm a black belt from Heroes Martial Arts, which is in San Jose, California, under Alan Gumby Marcus. Gumby is very famous in North America and different parts of the world because of he's one of the founders of onthemat.com, which was one of the first like big jiu-jitsu news and video sites. He started it with my boy Scotty. Shout out to Scotty and Gumby. And you know, all three of us started up under Half Gracie together. But I took a longer route than them. They got their black belts a long time ago. I was always like training in and out, you know, family man, father, whatever. And I never had aspirations to be Mundial champion. I never had aspirations to be in a cage. I just wanted to learn jiu-jitsu. And so I would take time off between each belt. But, you know, Gumby is one of Half Gracie's most technical students, and he's got a lot of technical students, but from the original ones, like, he's definitely one of them, you know. And so I got my black belt from him a little more than a year ago after training for almost like 24 years. It took me forever, but alhamdulillah, you know, it's been good. I also was the chess and jiu-jitsu instructor at Zaytuna College in Berkeley, California, for several years until the pandemic hit. And I teach at Half Gracie San Jose, Half Gracie Santa Clara. And I also teach at University of San Francisco right now, where they have a jiu-jitsu club that's growing. It's good.
Awesome, man. So Half Gracie's got like this, from my understanding, he's a tough dude, man. He's like a pit bull.
Yeah, he's got that nickname for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, I was there in the early Mountain View days. The Mountain View Academy doesn't exist anymore. It's moved. It's now the San Jose Academy is, you know, what Mountain View used to be. But, you know, in those early days, some of you young bucks who are brand new, this ain't going to mean nothing to y'all. But, you know, I was on the mats with Dave Camarillo, Dan Camarillo, BJ Penn. I remember BJ Penn's first day
house.
Yeah. Yeah. BJ used to live like a... I remember BJ used to live about a mile from my house. And so we used to train a lot, me, him, his brother, JD, Alex Oxendine. Kurt Osiander was a purple belt back in those days, you know, and he was making me a better fighter in a lot of ways. He was the main one who got me to actually like understand how to do arm bars and how to use my body, because I was taller than a lot of the guys. I'm like 6'3". So, you know, like half of them are like 5'8", 5'10", you know what I mean? And so Kurt was like, bro, your legs are long, dude. You gotta train different, bro. You gotta put your foot over here, bro. It's not gonna work.
That's a really good courtesy.
That's how you know I grew up with Kurt. You know what I'm saying? You're blowing it, bro.
worst fingers in jiu-jitsu though. Worst fingers, man.
Gnarled. You know what I'm saying? Those are the hands of a journeyman warrior.
If those fingers can speak, man, I swear to God. I remember watching one of his videos and he showed his finger. I was like, what the hell happened? Did it like claw, like, you know, eagle claws, man?
Yeah, I know.
What was he like?
Kerr was fantastic, man. He was rowdy. He was tough. It wasn't, I mean, I'll be frank with you. Like, a lot of the stuff that happens in jiu-jitsu schools right now, like, I'll just say it was very different. You know, it was in the early days of jiu-jitsu, so people, they didn't really know what it was. Other people were coming in to challenge, you know what I'm saying? So sometimes stuff would get live. Half was a great teacher, but he was also still fighting. You know what I mean? He was still fighting. And so there was a lot of that old school Brazilian culture that was in our school, and that had some pros and some cons. You know what I'm saying? Like, now dudes be up, you know, getting their little acai bowl after class in a nice white gi. But what are you talking about?
I like that whole kind of Wild West kind of cowboy kind of, it was wild, man. We just hear the stories, man, dojo storms and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
man.
It was grimy, bro. So I started under Hal. Then after a while, after my son was born, I started training with Charles Gracie, his brother. And I got my blue belt from Charles. And then I kind of quit for a while. And then I reconnected with Gumby because Gumby had stayed with Half that entire time. And he said he was starting Heroes Martial Arts in San Jose. You know, there's two locations of Heroes. One is in downtown. And then there's a new location on the east side of San Jose. And they're both amazing schools. And so, like, our school is, you know, look, the Bay Area is a shark tank for jiu-jitsu. You know, Heroes is a dope school. Tough guys, tough women. It's real training, the way that, you know, I think how would want it to be. But I mean, like, you know, Kyle Terra is here, El Nino is here, you know, Denny Procopos, you know, Eddie Bravo's first black belt is here, you know, and
Keenan Cornelius done there? Didn't he open up?
He's I think towards like San Diego, LA area or something He's not up here. Okay. But it's, you know, Dave Camarillo, Gorilla Jiu Jitsu is up here. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
if you can give us a little bit of obviously of us guys in the UK, Zach's gonna bring up a map, yeah. So
yeah.
Just because I know California is huge, yeah. So in our head, we're thinking, you know what, you could just pop down to, you know,
LA.
LA.
It's like a 5-hour drive.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I'm thinking to myself, because I watched a documentary a while back called SoCal Jiu-Jitsu or something like that. It was documenting Jiu-Jitsu in the Southern California area. Mm-hmm. San Diego, is that North Carolina? North?
That's South. So, I'm in the North, right? Yeah. San Francisco Bay Area. Yeah. Then you go down about, like, 4 hours and you get to LA, and then I think like an hour and a half south is San Diego. So San Diego is going to be like right before you get to Mexico and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right. So I've literally in the time you mentioned that sentence, I've mixed up San Diego and San Francisco twice. Sorry, but so Zach, pull up the map if you can, bro.
I'm the same way with the UK. I never know where I'm at. I'm in London. I'm in Leeds. What's Bradford?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the UK is probably the same size, smaller than California.
I think you're right.
It could be, man, because obviously I'm terrible with... okay, so there we are.
Yeah, right. West Coast!
Okay, come we want to know, where's Crenshaw, man? That's what we want to know, man. Where's
Crenshaw's down in LA. That's nowhere near me. That's LA.
Because I know.
So where are you? Is that San Diego? That's not the Bay.
That's San Diego right there.
Yeah. That's San Diego.
Get us a flat view, bro, if you can. Zach's gone all like futuristic on us, bro.
Look at that, huh?
That's beautiful,
nice,
man.
Nice little bay there. Hey, man, the weather of San Diego is way better than the weather of the Bay. It's like the architecture and everything is very similar, but it's like San Francisco with way better weather.
So Zach,
they got way better weather.
You've just done what I did, bro. You mixed up San Diego with San Francisco, bro.
No, that's San Diego, bro.
Yeah, we're looking for San Francisco. That's where Bishop is. Bro.
I heard San Diego.
You're in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, bro. Before you get shot, bro. Come on,
bro. Thank you. All right.
There you go. That's where he is. Okay.
All right. This is the San Francisco Bay. Right, so pull back.
There you go.
Look at that. Huh?
That's beautiful, man.
Come on, man. This is what California love is about.
There you go.
You understand me?
All right. So, okay, Zach, can you give us a flat view, bro? Just zoom out a little bit so we can get our bearings a little bit. Zoom out a little bit.
Give me a landmark where you guys are.
Put in Ralph Gracie, San Francisco.
Hey, that's a good place.
Ralph Gracie, San Francisco.
There you go. All right, just eat your heart out, Sky News, man.
How about that?
There you go.
Yeah, see, there it is right there.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Are you training there now still?
Nah, I'm in San Jose. I just wanted to give you guys something in San Francisco. Okay, I do this. Right. I'm Half is there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? All kind of other instructors are there. You know what I'm saying? But I'm in San Jose. I'm like 45 minutes south.
Okay.
I just wanted you to see San Francisco.
Beautiful. So San Francisco is quite, there's a lot of hills, right?
It's a lot of hills and it's a mix. It's a mix. You know what I mean? It's a mix.
I say that because I watched.
Put in the Golden Gate Bridge. Put in the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, yeah, That's something
beautiful. You got to do that.
And which side of the Golden Gate Bridge are you?
I'm actually right near SFO Airport. SFO Airport is not technically in San Francisco. It's in a city called San Bruno. It's like right outside.
Right.
Yeah, look at the Golden Gate.
Look at that, man. Beautiful, bro.
Beautiful.
Is that zoom out completely out? A little bit more?
Yeah.
That's it, a little bit more? That's the scene from Planet of the Apes, man.
Nice.
You know, it's so bad. That's all I know about America.
Man. Hey, I'm telling you, if you come to San Francisco, you go to Muir Woods. Muir Woods is where they filmed, I think, Planet of the Apes and The Empire Strikes Back. Remember when they were fighting in the trees and they were flying off?
Oh, they shot it there, yeah.
That's all Muir Woods, man. So I'd be in there and I just keep waiting to hear like Caesar go, no.
That's awesome, man. Okay. So Zach, zoom out a bit more just so we see the whole of San Francisco.
The whole California Bay, homie, the West Coast.
More. That's it. Stop there. Okay.
Whew. Look at that.
So that technically that should have been Mexico, right?
Yeah, for sure. It used to be known as Aztlan before the colonizers showed up.
Right. I got you, man. So It's interesting, man. A border moves and all of a sudden you're an immigrant, man. It's crazy. Okay, so how Mexican is California, man?
Still very Mexican, especially San Francisco and San Jose, man. Like, still very Mexican, still very El Salvadoran,
right.
Guatemalan, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's still bunches of gentrification, but, you know, we out here.
Well, this is another thing as well. Do you get authentic halal Mexican food there, man? You know the spots?
Oh, yeah. See, that's one of the beauties of the Bay, right?
Yeah.
Is that because there's so much intercultural activity,
yeah,
right? You have so many different spots. Like right now, they have a thing out here called Halal Fest, where it's like halal food trucks will go to a venue, and it'll just be everything. Burgers, burritos, this, that, like every kind of, you know, food you could want. Like recently, they had a talk by Habib.
Right.
And they had Halal Fest trucks all on the outside, man.
Beautiful. And Habib's in San Jose, right? AKA
is in San Jose, but right, he, I think, lives actually in San Francisco.
So he lives in the U.S. now?
Yeah. I mean, I think, when he's in here, I think he trains in San Jose, but he likes to be in San Francisco.
And also another thing, man, halal soul food, man.
Ooh, listen.
See, real talk.
They got so many halal soul food and vegan like soul food joints out here. It's out of control. They got a spot in Oakland, right by Lake. They got a spot called Lake Merritt. Tell your boy to pull up Vegan Mob. Vegan space MOB in Oakland. Yo, I just ate over there. They have like this vegan burrito thing. It's called a barbaquito.
Bro, you lost me at vegan, man.
Listen, though, that's only because you haven't tasted it. It's so good. I'll take your word
for it, man.
Listen, I went there because it was like vegan.
Though. Is it fake?
Yo, yeah, bro, but it's out of control. It looks and feels like brisket. Look at that.
No way. It looks. You know what? I saw. Who went there, man? Someone.
Yo.
I saw a video about it.
Listen. Listen, that food is out of control. It's not even like by saying vegan, I know to most people it undercuts the flavor spike that's going on over there. Because it's no joke. It's no joke. I was just over there.
So woo! Can I ask you a question? Like this is because for me, yeah, like we don't have any soul food here. Like we don't have any kind of
it's so, a tragedy of the world. I'm tragedy, sorry, man. For everyone there.
So talk us through just a little. I know it's not a food podcast, but
yeah,
since
yeah.
I've got you.
Yeah.
Let me ask you some questions. Okay, so talk us through your favorite soul food, man.
So my favorite soul food is going to be things like macaroni and cheese. I'm talking about that layered mac and cheese where the top is all baked in and crispy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be barbecue brisket.
So when
right?
you say, Bishop, yeah? Layered mac and cheese. So you mean layered with what?
So it's like cheese, a bunch of noodles, then cheese, a bunch of noodles, right. cheese, a bunch of noodles, like just and it's baked, and then the top has cheese on top.
Right.
So like, woohoo! You see what I'm talking about? you see what I'm talking about? Hey, right.
Is that the guys there are licking their lips, man? That looks delicious.
Woo! It's out of control.
So you'd have a bit of that. Have a bit of biscuit.
Yeah, and then usually my mom's would make like collard greens, which are, you know, it's like spinachy, but it's different. It's cooked different. And what they do is they'll take like smoked turkey meat and they'll put it in the pot and they cook it slow, like collard greens cook for a long time. So you got the collard greens mixed with the smoked turkey, out of control. All right. And then, oh my God. And then a sweet potato pie, right? Or like for Muslims, it would be a bean pie. Now, see out there, you guys don't know what a bean pie is. A bean pie is a dessert. Look up a bean pie. Woo! You see what I'm talking about.
You know, you said sweet potato pie. Isn't that something that we can eat? Or has it got some sort of pork in it or something?
No. It's just like sweet potato with like cinnamon nutmeg. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But like Muslim Americans are eating a bean pie.
Okay.
Right? A bean pie is like,
put bean pie, bro.
Yo, man. A bean pie is one of
that's
the,
a bean pie.
Yeah, like one of the best desserts you could ever have on this earth, boy. I'm trying to tell you. A bean pie is out of this world.
So what
and
kind
only
of,
Muslim, it's a Muslim American dish, though.
Okay, right.
Yeah,
what kind of beans?
Muslim American dish. Oh, my. They use, I think, navy beans. Right. So they use these navy beans, but then instead of going savory, they go sweet. You feel what I'm saying? So it's not like black beans or red beans. Right. It's a different flip. Oh my gosh.
So what kind of flip is it? Like what kind of sweetness is it? Is it?
I'm trying to, it's hard for me to describe. It's good. All I can tell you is it's great.
Good.
Like one of my boys, he came out from Leeds. He was doing business in San Francisco and I literally went and bought him a bean pie before I saw him. And I went to Talif over in, they had a halal truck thing. It was like at the end of, it was Eid. I went and got a bean pie because I had told my fiance about bean pie. She was like, that sounds gross. I was like, no, you don't understand. It's another level. So I said, I need you to eat this so you can tell her how good it is.
Yeah.
So he ate it and was like, yeah, it's really good.
Oh man, I could talk about this all day. You mentioned Oakland.
Oakland.
So Oakland, isn't that where Bone Thugs are from?
No, they're from Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Tupac wasn't really from Oakland, but he was from like Marin City. So you know when you look at the Golden Gate?
Yeah.
Right? So you got San Francisco. When you cross the Golden Gate, that's where Marin City is. They got a real nasty hood there called the Jungle. He was from over in that area in the Jungle.
So Pac was from Oakland.
And then so he moved over to Oakland when he started doing work with Digital Underground and a couple other dudes, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I knew him, he was in Oakland, you know what I'm saying?
So Puck,
well, when I first
go carry on, bro.
No, I think Yeah, he was in Oakland when I met him, but I knew about him when he was in Marin, but I didn't meet him, I think, until he lived in Oakland.
Because I want to get in all that as well. Definitely is something that... but I wanted to speak a little bit about... so your childhood growing up and how you got into this whole hip-hop journalism stuff. And then taking us all the way through to your jiu-jitsu journey. And
yeah, so the cliff notes are I grew up in San Bruno, which is, like I said, right outside of San Francisco. But my family, you know, my mother and my father's side are all in San Francisco, or at least were back then. And so I grew up in the suburbs, and it was weird because it was like, it was mostly white. And so they'll normally think like, oh, you know, you're black, but you live in the burbs. That's cool. It's cool from the standpoint of like, people aren't really getting shot and stuff every day, but you're still like a social outcast, right? People, sometimes people's parents don't want you to come in the house because they're actually racist for real. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes kids won't play with you. There's a lot of N-word stuff. So there was just a few black families in my area. So like, we definitely weren't like no kind of gang, but we had to stick together because, you know what I mean? Yeah. You don't know how you're going to be treated, whatever. But it wasn't like violent racism. It was just like, you know, sometimes you get into a fist fight, but it wasn't nothing too major. But and then in junior high, I got introduced to hip hop through my cousin. And I just became obsessed. And then this would have been around 1983. And then around 1988.
What? One second. 83. That's the year I was born, man. Like, black don't crack for real. Like, wow. Allah mubarak. Mashallah.
I don't want to give you. 52, man. 52 out here. 52.
So Puck would have been your age.
Yeah. We knew each other young, bro. I was like I might have been 21 when I met him, but I think I was 19.
Wow. 83, man.
Yeah, bro.
MashaAllah. Sorry, I'll let you carry on, man. Yeah,
I'm grateful, you know what I'm saying? So I started getting hip-hop around 83. Around 88 is when I started, like, trying to, like, really, like, do it, you know what I'm saying? And then, like, I interviewed Eazy-E for my high school newspaper, like, before he was famous, because I just liked the song. It was brand new. It was not a hit yet. I just happened to call and see if I could interview him. He let me interview him.
Which one was it? Then, like, which song was it?
Boys in the Hood, when it first dropped.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, when Boys in the Hood first dropped. Like, I happened to get it that week. You know what I mean?
From the record store.
Yeah. And then in those days, in the center of the record, they would have the number to the label, like on the inside of the center of the record. So I called to see if I could interview him, and they let me interview him. And then, like, we became cool.
What was he
you
like?
You know what I'm saying? Hilarious. He was funny, bro. He was funny. Like, I think with him and Tupac, because of their persona and their music, like, I think people think they're dudes who walked around like kicking kittens and like being angry all day. Bro, they were hilarious. Like, Tupac was one of the funniest people I ever knew, ever. I laughed and joked with Tupac more than any other rapper. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was hilarious, bro. So I think like, and Eazy was the same. Like, Eazy was a jokester. He was silly. And so, you know, so I started writing for a lot of the publications back then. And then when Wu-Tang Clan put out 36 Chambers, I had done one of the first articles on hip hop and martial arts for Rap Pages magazine back then. It was an article called Beyond Shaolin. And it was like looking at like African martial arts, you know, through the lens of hip hop and the Kung Fu films and stuff like that. And then, you know, in those days, I had met GZA from Wu-Tang before Wu-Tang Clan existed. I had met him when he was just a solo MC. So we were always cool. Then later I met RZA. I always liked chess. So I started this store called the Hip Hop Chess Federation, which was about like chess and martial arts and hip hop. And we would do these events and stuff. I shut the org down, but I'm starting a new org called 64 Blocks real soon. And 64 Blocks is going to be about jiu-jitsu, chess, and meditation. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I'm excited about launching 64 Blocks real soon. You guys should be seeing some stuff from me on that. And then, you know, not as much hip hop, not because I don't love it as much, but the music doesn't promote chess as much as it used to. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't really want to have problems with parents who rightfully are concerned about hip hop sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, hip hop enriched me and it grew me and it continues to grow me and enrich me in tons of different ways. But I understand as a parent, if you don't know and if you don't have that discernment, like why you would be nervous or why you would kind of whatever. And I don't want to have those conversations. I'd rather just bring the kids into the jiu-jitsu, bring the kids into the chess, help teach the kids meditation and help them learn philosophy on their own. And like hip hop's going to be around. It's not going anywhere. You know what I mean? But I just can't make it like the forefront of what I do, you know, as much.
Something that always struck me about, especially Wu-Tang, like I remember being a kid and being into martial arts. And like, what is the, because obviously, like you remember back in the day, especially I'm a kid of the 90s, yeah? Information didn't travel as fast as now, right? You get everything instant, yeah? So I always wondered what the fascination was with martial arts and how did it cross over? Why is it that, especially Black Americans, actually Black people in general, because in the UK, there was a fascination between Black people and martial arts, man. It was, especially Bruce Lee, you know?
Dude.
So what would you say, what would you say is the kind of link?
I'm so glad you asked me this question because right now there's a place called the Chinese Historical Society. It's in Chinatown. And they have a Bruce Lee exhibit called Under the Sky, One Family. How beautiful is that?
Beautiful, yeah.
Under the Sky, One Family. And it's about Bruce Lee, okay? I was lucky enough to get invited to be a co-producer on a film called Rhythm of the Dragon. And Rhythm of the Dragon is about how Bruce Lee, before he was known as a martial artist, he was actually known as a dancer. He was a cha-cha dancer, specifically.
Serious?
He was a champion dancer in China, and he was a champion dancer, I believe, in North America. And so what Rhythm of the Dragon is about, I did this film with my boy Del Rox and my boy Seti X. Seti is actually a Sikh beat maker and MC, you know what I'm saying? And Del Rox is Filipino. So it's cool. Remember I talked about this intercultural thing, right, in the Bay, okay? So we came together, put this film together. And what we're looking at is Bruce Lee's history of dance and how rhythm played out in his fighting, the rhythm of his fighting and the impact that he had on Black America, right? And so it's an amazing exhibit, right? But one of the, like in general, but we have a short film in the exhibit, but the exhibit's amazing, right? And so when you look at Bruce Lee and you look at his impact, the reason that is because there were no Black people on television, right? When Bruce Lee fought back for justice, when Bruce Lee, you know, was being disrespected because he was Chinese and, you know what I mean? And in his films and then fighting back, it gave Black people hope, right? You got to remember that hip hop comes out of the ashes of the civil rights era, right? So that means the Black Panthers are gone, Malcolm X is dead, Martin Luther King is dead, right? All of these things that were supposed to bring progress, they don't exist, right? And now disco's big, right? So dudes is walking around in satin pants and big afros and rollerblading, you feel me? Yeah. But then there are all these other young men and women in the inner cities being like, that's not who we are though. And they're the ones who open the door to hip hop, right? And so as that door opens to hip hop, like a lot of people don't know that Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon debuted in New York the same year that hip hop really started to get its baby legs in 1973. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Bobby Fischer won the world championship in 1973.
Who's Bobby Fischer?
So look at three things. Three things happen together, looking separate, but they happened at the same time.
So sorry, who's Bobby Fischer? So
Bobby Fischer was the world champion of chess for America.
Okay, right.
Right. So he beats Boris Spassky, the Russian, who always dominated. Russians have always dominated chess, you know, in the competitive space, and they always will. I'll be blown away if they're ever unseated. Like, it's just a part of their culture, right? But Bobby Fischer beat Boris Spassky, right? So chess is big, martial arts is blowing up, and then hip-hop is born all at the same time. You also had Black people that fought in Vietnam, right? And were stationed in different parts of the world, and they start learning karate. They start learning like Japanese jiu-jitsu. They start learning judo, and they bring it back. You see what I'm saying? They bring it back. So those things happening together are what made Bruce Lee such a favorite for Black people. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, Bruce Lee's impact is amazing. And so think about it. In 73, right, you have all this explosion. In 83, hip hop has moved past its baby legs and actually starts having, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Some movement. And then in 93, Wu-Tang Clan, which is like the perfection of it, right? But there's other artists who talk about martial arts and hip hop, like Public Enemy had the S1Ws and stuff like that. And, you know, Tila Rock on his record, there was some other stuff. And, you know, J. Rue the Damager, you know what I'm saying? Afu Ra, right? Body of the Life Force, his album, right? But man, like Wu-Tang Clan was the perfect embodiment of that, you know what I mean? So when I started Hip Hop Chess Federation, me and Jizza, me and RZA, we just hit it off from the beginning, and it was easy to do, you know?
Wow. I've never heard it put like that, man, because I watched like different documentaries, and because that era fascinated me, because being someone from the UK, especially being from North Africa as well,
right?
So we kind of, we're strange people, yeah,
because right.
we're fair skinned, but we're African,
right.
Yeah, but
right.
We're not white. Does that make
right.
sense? So there's this kind of like. Like they don't like. When I remember, I used to say I'm from Algeria. People are like, oh, you're not Nigerian. What are you talking about? And it's like it's kind of like they don't get it. They don't get. People don't understand Africa in general. Yeah,
but at all, bro.
Yeah, yeah. So even like if you look at historically as well, I mean, Africa's always been somewhere where it's been a melting pot for, you know, centuries. Yeah.
Totally.
So
totally.
I remember looking at as a kid, like being as a Muslim as well, because a lot of the
right.
A lot of the hip hop artists had affinity with Islam, and
exactly
like
a lot of hip hop influenced me coming to Islam. I converted in part because of Public Enemy.
No
you know
way.
What I'm saying?
Uh-huh. So when did you become Muslim?
1991.
And can you just
1990.
Tell us a little bit about how the circumstances that led you to become Muslim.
So
I'm
the,
sure
the
it was
first
more than
part,
one, but
yeah. So the first part is my father and my mother took me to Spain to visit my uncle when he worked for the consulate. And so my parents took me to the Alhambra, and my father, while walking, we're taking like a tour of the Alhambra, and he kind of pulled me away from the rest of the thing. And he said, look, he goes, Black people and Arab Muslims, they made all of this. Don't forget that. Like, right. Because a lot of times still in Spain, people will act like the Moors were not Black.
Exactly.
And they will act like, you know what I'm saying? They'll be like, you know. And so I remember we went to King Ferdinand's castle, and we were at the top. He was holding me. I was like 8 or 9 years old. He was holding me. He was pointing across the Strait of Gibraltar, and he was like, that's home, son. Do you understand? He said, that's home. And even at that time, I was like, I get it. You know what I mean? I get it. So fast forward, that was 9. Fast forward 9 years later, I'm listening to Public Enemy, and they put out Bring the Noise, and Bring the Noise had this opens with Malcolm X, too Black, too strong, too Black, too strong. And then the music starts. And I knew I had heard that. My father used to play Malcolm X records for me when I was a kid, because we didn't really always go to church and stuff like that. We weren't really a church going family. But sometimes in the morning, my dad would get up, he'd make breakfast for us. And then after he would play like Malcolm X, he'd just like sit and listen to it. Right. In those days, I didn't know, because he would be like, I'm still a Muslim. You know, I'm not in the Nation of Islam, but I'm still Muslim. And I was like, what is Islam? Like, I was at a Christian school at that time. I didn't really know what it meant to have another faith. I didn't, you know, I thought growing up in America that everybody was Christian, or you didn't believe in God, or you were a Jew. That was it. Cause I knew Jews didn't celebrate Christmas. They had Hanukkah. I didn't know what that was like, but that was it. I didn't really get it. I definitely didn't know what Islam meant. So because of Public Enemy, I started trying to read about Malcolm X, right? Which leads me to his autobiography, and the autobiography led me to study more about Islam, and that led me to taking Shahada. You know what I'm saying?
And where did you take Shahada?
I took Shahada at Masjid al-Islam, which is on 82nd MacArthur in Oakland. You know what I'm saying? And it was 1990. It was really rough. I mean, it's Islam, but it's still Oakland. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? So like,
so how did it affect your life afterwards?
Oh, I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for Islam. Like, I absolutely would not be alive. Because when I was in high school, I had a fairly decent drinking problem that I handled on my own, like my junior year of high school. But one of the reasons I was brought to Islam or attracted to Islam is because I was like, oh, you can't drink alcohol? I was like, I need that, right? A religion where you don't drink alcohol is going to be good for me. Because most of the alcoholics that I knew and the people that were abusing alcohol, they were all Christian. They were all Christian. Some were church-going Christians. Some were nominal Christians. Some were half and half. But they were all Christian, okay? So I was like, yeah, if you're not doing drugs and if you're not drunk, that's a religion that could help me. You know what I'm saying?
How did your family take it, like your parents?
My father was more cool with it than my mother, but over the years, my mom got cool with it. The rest of my family, like on my mother's side of the family, definitely embraced it, was not tripping. My father's side of the family were all hilariously mocking my decision. I think more out of ignorance than like hate, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't, you know, it was like, oh, you don't eat pork now? You know, it was like all this like usual stuff or whatever, but nothing oppressive, just kind of ignorant jokes, whatever, you know what I mean? But you know, I ate a lot of pork back then. I was not conscious of my diet, and like coming to Islam refined my diet, you know what I mean? And it was during that time I started really getting into martial arts. I was always a fan of Bruce Lee ever since I was a child, like 9 years old. So, you know, I started doing Eskrima Serrada, which is like a Filipino stick fighting art, but I was horrible at it. When I tell you I was horrible, I mean, I was horrible, but I wouldn't quit. I just kept training. I was horrible. And then one day my boy, Jamie, who we trained in Eskrima, and he was really good. He was like, hey man, I saw these guys from Brazil, bro. Look at this. And he showed me Gracie in Action 2 and Gracie in Action 1. And this was before the UFC. And I was like, word? Nah, you could just get a guy on the ground and punch him like you were in the third grade? That don't look like it works. And, you know, we started training off the videotapes. And then he called me one day and was like, yo, how if Gracie's near you? Because I lived in San Jose with my ex-wife at the time. And he was like, you know, they how great. I was like, who's Half? He was like, call him the Pitbull, man. You got to go over there. He's Royce's cousin. So I went over there. I first trained with Dave Camarillo and oh my God, Bobby Southworth. My first day, Half wasn't there the first day that I trained. And I was so sore. I was so sore because I was not a physical person. You know what I mean? So just doing the workout was killing me, let alone actually trying to grapple. And I was so sore. I was waking up in my sleep from moving in my sleep. I was like, just, you know, moving around. And I remember looking at the ceiling and I was like, yo, this stuff really hurts, yo. I was like, maybe you're not built for this like you thought you were, maybe. And I was like, you know what? Go back. And if it hurts this bad again, you can quit. But maybe if you go there and it doesn't hurt, you'll stay. And then I stayed. You know what I mean?
Alhamdulillah. So another question I'll ask, because obviously you're another hip hop question, yeah. Why hasn't jiu-jitsu crossed over? You're right there.
I'm so sorry. Someone the call it muted the call.
No,
I'm
it's
sorry.
All good. It's all good. It's all good. Actually, let me just take this moment because Imran, can you move the camera so I'm because I'm looking directly at you, but it looks like I'm looking away. I'm just gonna move the camera.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Move the camera a little bit. Zach, change the. We'll cut all this out anyway.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
Yeah. Just a little bit to the right. Come on. Yeah, a little bit to the right. No, as in turn it. Yeah. No, this way.
This way.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Word.
Oh, sorry. So the question was, initially Kung Fu and hip hop had this kind of, this mesh, but Jiu-Jitsu hasn't really kind of crossed over into it, if you know what I mean.
No, it has, man.
Has it?
Yeah, it has, man. Yo, like, all the hip hop dudes are starting to train Jiu-Jitsu now.
Interesting. I thought it's more like punk rock guys and Stoners.
Nah, it was at the same time, but just both very slow. So, right. For example, Rocka from the rap group Dilated Peoples, he trained under Helio Gracie, Hiron, and Henner Gracie, right? Okay. Like back in the day, right? Like right around the time I started with Half, he was starting with them. And one of my boys, Encore did this crazy rap track called Water World. He was doing stuff in LA and he's like, oh, Rocka from Dilated trained jiu-jitsu, you guys should meet. And so for like a couple of years, me and Rocka just used to talk on the phone. He's a purple belt. But like, he's like me, train forever, but train stop kind of a thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Evidence from Dilated. He also trained. I don't think he trains as much anymore, but I know he used to, like DJ Babu. There's a rap group called Hieroglyphics. Sozo Mischief is in there. Tajay, he does Japanese jiu-jitsu and Sanukas, right? There's a lot more dudes, a lot of B-boys are starting to do more jiu-jitsu and stuff. So it's totally growing in hip-hop. Right, totally growing in hip-hop. I just think the thing is that they don't have an icon like Bruce Lee, right? Like,
yes.
Like all that kind of pointed towards Bruce Lee or pointed towards Jackie Chan or pointed towards Jet Li. Like, there is not yet, like, an icon of the sport in hip hop, people are still talking about Bruce Lee more than Hoyce Gracie or Helio or Half or whatever. But all of that stuff, all of the energy around Bruce leads them to jiu-jitsu. You see what I'm saying?
But isn't it true that, I don't know I might have got this wrong, that Bruce was the first Asian to actually teach non-Asians martial arts, and especially black people as well? He had black people in his gym.
So this is a big deal, right? It's a real serious discussion that people have still, right? Where Bruce always said, look, you know, and Chinese, I think I could be getting this wrong because I don't speak Chinese, that the term for a non-Chinese person is like guailo. You can be black or white or whatever. As long as you're not Chinese, you're guailo, right? And so he taught a guy named Jesse Glover. Jesse Glover was one of his first students. He was black up in Seattle. When Bruce Lee was buried, the people at the gravesite began to try to do stuff, and Jesse stopped them so that he could be, as a student, the person to bury his master. Right. You see what I'm saying? And if you look, there's a book called Bruce Lee, A Life. And I think the guy's name is Matthew Polly, P-O-L-L-Y. Polly is the last name. It's one of the best books on Bruce Lee's life ever. Right? Bruce Lee, A Life, right? And the other book you should buy on Bruce Lee is called Striking Distance. Striking Distance, which is just a ridiculous book by a guy named Charlie Russo. And it's specifically about Bruce Lee's life in and around the Bay Area, right? Because he moved a lot between Seattle and the Bay Area. Unbelievable book. Unbelievable guy. Russo is unbelievable.
Is he related to Daniel Russo?
So, you know,
that was a bad joke, bro. That was a bad joke.
Sorry, man.
Did you see the pause? Did you see me pause?
I saw you. He's like, this guy for real.
So there are people. I know a guy. Okay, so you know he had that famous fight with that guy, like Wong Jackman, guy who came from China, right?
Who broke his back, but was he the one who broke his back?
So here's the interesting thing. Apparently, that injury was real, but it didn't come from that fight.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? The injury was real, but it didn't come from it. He did have some type of accident that Wong Jackman, right? So they fought, right? Now, Bruce's side has always said, the Chinese didn't like us teaching whites and black, period, right? But a lot of people be like, that was never the case, blah, 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 right? And okay, fine. They may not have been against it, but when you look at pictures, integrated shots of people in Chinatown who were doing martial arts, only a few whites are in the pictures. You don't see no, but I've never seen any black people in those pictures, okay? Only Bruce and his crew have blacks and whites, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In my experience, I ain't gonna say that he didn't, you know what I'm saying? Now, I also know a guy whose brother trained under Wong Jackman, and he was black. And so I think Wong Jackman was cool. I sometimes feel like Wong Jackman was kind of like a fall guy for the kung fu people in San Francisco who were afraid of Bruce Lee, right? So they were like, oh, let me put in a call to the homie from China. You know what I'm saying? He'll handle it. You know what I'm saying? Because they didn't want to get beat up. You feel me? And then so he fought him, and then Wong Jackman kind of gets the – but I don't even think Wong Jackman had beef with Bruce.
Oh, right.
I think
right.
He was just trying to come to America to kick it, and they're like, oh, this guy's talking crazy about Southern Shaolin. How you feel about repping one time? You know what I mean?
By the way, baddest name.
Wong Jackman, yes.
Sorry, that name is just a killer, man. No one called Wong Jackman did not know how to fight. There's no way you called Wong Jackman and you can't fight. Impossible.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think that, you know, look, it was the late 60s, early 70s. There was a lot of anti-Asian stuff going on. Yeah. It would make sense that they would kind of feel that way. You know what I mean? But it also made sense that someone like Bruce would have to think beyond those ideas and open martial arts up to everyone, man. You know what I mean?
So what about black people in jiu-jitsu, man?
I mean, you know,
amongst the community, what? Because I know boxing's, you know, big in the black community.
I think it's taken a while. Jiu-jitsu was just starting to catch on in the hoods, and I think that's because jiu-jitsu is expensive.
That's what I was gonna say.
Right,
yeah.
Jiu-jitsu is expensive, right? So black people and people who are lower middle class are always kind of priced out. But I think it's taken because of the blow up of the UFC and because jiu-jitsu is growing so fast. And, you know, black people, we like boxing. You know what I mean? It's not like Ali, you know, yeah. But little by little, I'm finding more and more black people are starting to get into it. And so it's good, man. It's good, you know.
Also, I feel still like obviously you had Muhammad Ali, who was a strong black role model. And there's not someone similar in jiu-jitsu, if you know what I mean. Like that. That they can't anchor onto that and say, look, I want to be like him, if you know. Yeah.
I think it'll be a while. Like, I mean, you have like Tierra And you have like Jacare, you have like these like
dudes, but Brazilians, you know what I'm saying? Like an American kind of
We don't have that, right? And like even in Brazil, I don't know if you remember, there was a guy named Jamil Lau. He was a savage, right? Carlos Barreto. These were like black jiu-jitsu dudes that you know still inspire me. You feel me? But we need like a black dude from the hood to come up from nothing. Do jiu-jitsu, take over the planet, you know, maybe going to MMA, start knocking fools out. Like, I think that's coming.
Inshallah, man. Inshallah.
Now, hopefully I'll find them. I'm looking for
Why
them.
Not, man?
Start
opening clubs in the hood as well, because I feel like in Brazil, there was, from what I read, there was like a split. There was guys, you got the Gracies, and then you got the guys that used to teach in the favelas. And there was this whole kind of thing of, you know, teaching the favelas, all this stuff.
Listen, bro, all of that was a mix of clash and race war. That, like, people don't like to make it as simple as it is, right? But what it was is the dudes in the favelas couldn't afford gis.
Yeah.
So, you're not doing jiu-jitsu. What? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know? So that's what it was, man. It shouldn't have been the way it was, but no gi ended up getting its due in time anyway, right?
Exactly. So now talk to me a bit about your chess, because that's interesting. I played chess against my kids on holiday and I got whooped, man. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest with you, but I got whooped, man. So I need some, might have to get some pointers. But like, how did you get involved? You said your dad
My dad taught me about chess. My dad taught me about chess when I was 4. And it's important that everybody understands that I'm not that good. Right. I am not like a chess master. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I've just always had a healthy passion for the game.
Right.
But what it was is that as a kid, I always loved it. And that's where my nickname Bishop comes from.
Oh,
right.
Because
I used to like attack at angles. Right. So and that's what I realized as a grappler. Right. Like, I didn't want to run head into someone. I needed an angle. Right. So if I could find my angle, boom. Right. So the Bishop always appealed to me in that way. Also, I like the idea, the psychology of hitting people long range with ideas, let alone, you know what I mean, attacks. And so this thing has always been a part of like my DNA since I was a youngster, right? But when I was learning jiu-jitsu from Halp, it was always hard for me to remember moves. And so once I started recognizing, like, Halp would be like, okay, so you have a guy in your close guard and you grab his arm here. Then if he does this, then you do that. And I was like, oh, this is like jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is like chess, right? So my slogan has always been, you know, chess is jiu-jitsu for the mind and jiu-jitsu is chess for the body. This is the thing people always say, no, jiu-jitsu is like chess. I was saying it years ago, okay? I was saying it when other black belts would even be like, oh, what? It's not really like chess. And I was like, no, it really is, but you don't play chess, so you wouldn't know it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you have to take some time to equally steep yourself in both of the subcultures to see how alike they are. But they're very much alike. And so, you know, like, if I grab your wrist, there are several different ways that you can get out. And based on which of those ways you get out, you now have a counterattack, right? Or we go to a neutral space. And so, and that game will play out until one of us is in a chokehold or an arm lock, right? In chess, I'll put a pawn out, you'll put a pawn out. You'll go to protect that pawn, I'll go to protect mine. And we will play this game until we've lost material and someone has checkmated. It's the same sport, bro. Right? It's the same sport. So
the amount of different variations and different ways and also the attitude, the style depends on your
mm-hmm.
psychology, how you are as a person, all that stuff. Right? Yeah.
Right? You see what I'm saying? And okay. So all of this stuff is what I was writing about. For the last like almost 20 years, I started Hip Hop Chess Federation in 2006, but I was doing this research like 20 years before that. I was just researching it for myself. You know what I mean? Just researching it for myself. So, you know, chess always influenced my jiu-jitsu and jiu-jitsu always influenced my chess, and both my chess and my jiu-jitsu were always influenced by my Islam. So, you know what I mean? Like this has just been a big part of just how I am. Like, I think sometimes, like I had a friend ask me, he goes, man, when you started Hip Hop Chess Federation, were you just trying to think something out of the box? Were you trying to blah, blah, blah? And I was like, nah. You know what I mean? Like, some people are like, oh, I got to come out with some outlandish stuff. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't it. It was just who I naturally was. I was naturally attracted to these things. And I looked for the patterns between them. And, you know, alhamdulillah, man, like it all worked out. You know what I'm saying?
So, I mean, you mentioned that you got, you know, kids and do they train martial arts or?
So my son was training jiu-jitsu with me on and off. I never wanted to be one of those hardcore jiu-jitsu dads.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, come on, grapple, boy. We're gonna wrestle. Like, what? I don't want to wrestle. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he always got good enough to be a blue belt, and then he'd find a reason to not train.
Do you mind if I ask how old he is? If you know?
He's 24 right now.
Allah,
he's 24.
Mashallah. Right. Mashallah.
So, like, when he was like 15, I took him to a school, and I've been training him at home. And he was, and there was like a blue belt who's like 22 in the room, and I told the instructor we were cool. I was like, "Hey, bro, I want my son to squab with this dude, and they're gonna keep going until someone taps." And he was like, "All right, let's do it." You know what I mean? So neither one of them knew that was going on. You know what I mean? Just me and the instructor. So it was like, all right, blood, y'all squad. So they go for like 5 minutes, get real close. Beep, beep, beep. All right, cool. Get some water. Go again. Beep, beep, beep. Get some water. Go again. So then like finally, like around 15 minutes in, this dude was in my son's guard. He's trying to pass his guard. And then, he catches him and they kind of fall as the bell rang. They kind of fell. And like me and my boy are like sitting on the side of the mat. We're screaming like, man, you know how people be, ah, right? Yeah. And I'm like, what happened? What happened? And I walk over there and my son is about to die. Like, he's like, and I'm like, what happened? And he's like, he tapped to the triangle. He's like, and I was like, my boy. I was like, you know what I'm saying?
That's some Cobra Kai stuff right there, bro.
Yo, how crazy. We come from that.
Were you standing on the corner of the mat like this?
No, I was screaming like a mayhem fool the entire time. So then, like, he got up. I was like, "Blood, you 16, you a man now, boy." I said, he was 23, he was a blue belt. Come here, man. Let me get you some pizza or something. What you want, a hamburger? You know what I mean? But you know, he always needed enough just to you know, did enough to stay aware of how to defend himself. With my daughters, my oldest daughter was actually a beast wrestler. Like, she could, like, do, like, an ankle pick on anybody. But she was lazy. She didn't really care. You know what I mean? My youngest daughter actually, like, my son has the skills but didn't really care. You know what I'm saying? My oldest daughter, she didn't really care at all. But, you know, she'll do it just enough to know what's up. But my youngest, she was born with the gift. You know what I'm saying? Like, she had the mentality and the physicality. You know, my oldest daughter, she wasn't really that physical. My youngest, like, she was down for the squad. But then, like, I got divorced, and, like, after the divorce, you know, everybody hates dad. So then they're like, no, we don't like you kissing no more. I'm like, all right. You know what I'm so, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's like, you know, I think that, you know, my son was like 10 years old, he wanted to do baseball. So I was like, yeah, man, you can do baseball. So he's doing baseball. But I was like, however, we're still going to practice jiu-jitsu. And so he was like, why? Why do I have to do jiu-jitsu? Like, I don't understand. And I was like, here's the deal. I just got him this sick baseball glove. And, you know, when you get a baseball glove, you got to oil it. You got to wrap it in these strings and put in the ball, all this stuff. We had just done all that. His glove's looking fresh. And I was like, imagine you're going to baseball, like, we're going to walk to practice, but I'm not with you. And some kid's like, nice glove. I want that glove. I was like, what you're going to do is tell him no and defend the glove with jiu-jitsu. So, like, jiu-jitsu isn't an end unto itself. It's what you protect yourself and other people and things you love with, right? It's not really for the sake of itself. So you're learning it so you can defend your baseball, so you can defend your mom, so you can defend, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yourself when people are, and so he got it. You know what I mean? And like I said, I never was like pressing him to compete. I was never like, this is what the family does, boy. You know what I mean? I just made sure that he had enough in him so he could defend himself, right, intelligently. You know what I mean? And that's what I tell people today. Like, you shouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu necessarily to be a world champion or a UFC fighter. You should do it to be able to preserve yourself and the things you love.
So, well, so many questions, man. But I know we've only got like probably about 20 minutes or half an hour left, yeah?
If whatever you want, bro. I'm chilling.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about what you're doing currently now. So how you spend your time, like, you know, what you do for a living and how, because I think people really want to connect the dots. Because sometimes people see people only in one lens, innit? But everyone's multidimensional.
I mean, so.
If you don't mind me asking.
No. So I teach jiu-jitsu at Half Gracie San Jose and Half Gracie Santa Clara, 7 a.m. Come through. And then I teach at USF. And then a lot of my other time is actually taught doing privates with some people, and or writing. I mainly write for a website called Uproxx, UPROXX. Most of that stuff is about hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, I write about, there's a dude named Talib Kweli. He's in a group called Black Star with Yasin Bey, you know what I'm saying? So he has a podcast called The People's Party, and I write about The People's Party for Uproxx. So normally, let's say, like, you know,
he's doing a podcast with Dave Chappelle as well, right? Midnight something.
Midnight Miracle. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I do all the People's Party writing. So, you know, let's say some rapper came on and talked about whatever. I'll do a story about that, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And so that's really my life, man, is really I just do jiu-jitsu, you know what I'm saying? But I teach jiu-jitsu and meditation, you know what I mean? Meditation is a big part of my practice. So, and Stoic philosophy. Like my on Instagram and TikTok, I'm at Bishop Chronicles, and all I do is talk about jiu-jitsu, Stoic philosophy, and meditation. That's it. That's all I talk about. Because I find that, you know, one of the things that jiu-jitsu does is it helps you regulate your emotional state, right? And Stoic philosophy, like a lot of the Sufi practices are in that vein, right? Purification of the heart, purification of the soul, right? Purification of the tongue. You know, these Islamic practices are reflected in Stoicism, right? In the promotion of moderation, of how you master your emotions, right? Not that you don't feel them, but that you process them so that you still take a good action out of whatever life is thrown at you. You know what I'm saying? These different ideas like memento mori, which is the remembering death, right? Remembrance of death, right? This is a tradition, not only in samurai culture, right? In books like the Hagakure by Yamamoto Tsunetomo, but it's also the stuff that you'll find. Al-Ghazali wrote a whole book on remembering death. You see what I'm saying? And so, you know, alhamdulillah, you know, like the Stoic practices are easy things to help people understand. And meditation has been proven scientifically to have so many benefits for emotional mastery and physical benefits, right? That, you know, so my focus is there, you know what I'm saying? And so it's been really good. You know, I spent about 6 weeks out in the UK.
So you do that every year?
I come out several times a year. Yeah, I come out several times a year. You know what I'm saying? God willing, I'll be moving out there. You know what I'm saying?
No way.
In the next year or so. Yeah, inshallah.
How come?
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm in love.
With the UK? You
know? Yeah. and with a woman. So.
okay, right. You should have led with that, man. You should have led with that.
I'm in love with the woman and with the UK.
Alhamdulillah.
And so, yeah. So,
can
my
I ask
plan
what part
up.
Of the UK you are kind of looking to move? Is it?
It's dicey. So here's the deal. When I come out there, I'm usually in between London and Leeds, right? That's my main thing, between London and Leeds. Okay. But by the time I'm done settling, I'm not really sure. It'll probably be Leeds if I'm being honest.
Why, man? No one goes to Leeds, man. What are you talking about?
I like Leeds, bro. I like Leeds.
By the way, Leeds were white. Leeds is where white people were made. There's a factory where they make white people in Leeds. You know that?
Just straight off the line.
Just straight off the line. It's like fresh, man. Fresh. That's where they're made, man. So someone of your background.
Yeah.
Probably one of the blackest guys. You're going to be one of the blackest guys in Leeds, man. As in,
that's what I
culture-wise.
But then look, there were all these people from St. Kitts, Jamaicans, everywhere. I didn't know. I thought, I'm saying. I mean, it's not as black as London, right? It's not going to be as black as Tooting Broadway.
Yeah.
As black as Tooting Broadway.
Nah, I'm playing, man. All right, listen, so let me preface this before everyone from Leeds starts to rinse me out, yeah? I'm joking.
No, get out of him. Get at him. He's disrespected. Don't let him up from this. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
I'm going to say, I love everyone from Leeds. Your accent is wild. And by the way, Leeds is Yorkshire, right? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Yorkshire. They're known to be very... I heard a term. Yeah? It's an English term. Deep pockets, short arms. They're very good with money.
Oh, yeah.
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 So that's the kind of thing about, I think, I think it's called the black, is Leeds the black country? Is that why you wanted to go? It's called the black country, I'm pretty sure.
It was pure randomness. I had no.
Let me
I
get Zach
no...
to check it. Type in the black country, Zach, and just double check where that is in the UK. I think just that kind of like must have just drew me.
So
now Leeds is cool, man. It's green. It's open.
It reminds
very
me of
warm
Berkeley.
People as well, don't you think? Very kind of.
Yeah. No. So like. Leeds and Berkeley are almost very similar, right? They're college towns,
yes.
Right? it's like very suburban, but then a lot of nature. I'm all about like a mix of like suburban and nature, because I like to just kind of be by myself, chilling, whatever. And so, you know, what it was is like Stefan Zoll is a black belt under Ricardo Laborio, and he was living in Saudi. And me and him were cool on IG. And then me and him got cool. And then I met his sister, and then me and her got cool. And I was like, I think I'm fixing to move. And so, and so been back and forth for like 3 years, you know what I mean? Been back and forth for like 3 years, and it's been really amazing. But on top of that, I really fall in love with the jiu-jitsu culture in the UK. So, you know, I didn't really have any friends in the UK outside of my fiance and her family and her friends. But my first real friend was Eamon Madden from Aeon Jiu-Jitsu in Streatham.
He's a good guy. Trying to get him on the podcast, man.
Yeah, he's great. You should have him on. Yeah. And so he ended up having his school like about 5 minutes away, like 15-minute walk from where I am in Tooting Broadway. Right. So we became cool. Then I went up to Leeds, and Steph said, "Oh, you should go to Gracie Baja Roundhay Leeds. There's a good guy over there." Me and Professor Mike Bates met, and he's the guy that does the Atlantic Grappler. He's the guy that's going to row across.
Yeah.
Me and him just hit it off. You know how sometimes you meet a person, you just like click, like me and him super click. And you know, I was already cool with Eamon, and then I started like hanging out with the guys at GBRL, and they all just had love for me. And so every time I'd come, I'd meet a few more people in jiu-jitsu. And then that last time I was out, I was like, man, you know what? Let me see what's up with some of these different schools. And so I ended up going to Mustafa Mount, doing a seminar there. I went to Felicity House, right, in Liverpool, right, with Professor Mario Sukata, who's just amazing, right? And then I did Leicester Shoot Fighters, right? Did a seminar there. And then of course, you know, I was at GBRL, you know, as often as I could, just getting it in and, you know, sharing techniques and learning techniques. And it's just been really good. So, you know, I think it's time for me to, make the move over there, man. I'm just, working on the logistics, you know?
So I just find it really strange, bro, that you want to move to the UK. I don't know why. But like, because I think Bay Area, sunshine, like you got friggin' halal Mexican food. I don't understand. And do you know what I'm saying? And that vegan, was it called? The Mafia, was that?
Vegan Mob.
Vegan Mob. You got Vegan Mob over there. You got all that stuff. And then you're going to move to Leeds, bro. Like it's, and not that, by the way, I know I was joking about Leeds.
Everybody in Leeds, place. Pay attention. He's still dogging, y'all. He's still dogging. No. Pay attention. Don't be giving no forgiveness. I want y'all to see what he's saying. This is the internet. Go ahead.
So I'm saying, look, they're very warm people. Let me tell you, there's pros. London, if you die, no, people just step over your body, man. That's what
they
London's
will walk like. Right over you.
That's it, 100%. And I know, because when I go on holiday, I go out of London. I just find it so different. I was in Wales. I remember when I was meant to meet up, and then I was on holiday.
Yeah.
Do you remember? So I actually went to Wales for 10 days, and it's crazy how different people are. Like the way, just saying hello. If I walked down the street and I said hello to someone in London, he'd think I'm being sarcastic or something.
They would think you were weird or there was a hustle.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, oh, this fool's trying to play me. He don't know me. Get off, bro.
Exactly that. So, I mean, like, I wouldn't blame you not moving to London, to be honest with you. It's and especially with your...
Okay, so here's the deal. I actually like London. I like Leeds. I like Leicester. I think that what I'm enjoying, actually, to be totally serious, when I'm in the UK, is like America, man. First of all, the Bay is crazy expensive.
Is it?
Okay. Like an apartment or a flat that I could get in Leeds for like $900 or $1,000 costs like $2,500, $3,000 for the same space or less. You understand?
Yeah.
I have to go back in time to like 1993 to get the prices for an apartment that exists in Leeds right now. Mm. Okay. Yeah, on top of that, America has a weird problem. And America's biggest problem is that it is inherently allergic to moderation. Religious stuff is to an extreme. Racial stuff is to an extreme. Everything is to an extreme. It's either like prohibition on alcohol, prohibition on weed, or it's party time and I can't stop.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong? Because it's a problem of moderation, right? The political stuff, swinging hard left, everything's crazy, or swinging hard right, we're locking everything down. And it's like, yo, man, the middle path has value for a reason.
Bipolar.
And America can't do it. We can't do it. I don't know why. We've never been able to do it. And I'm at a point in my life where I'm just like, yo, man, how about some nature and some silence? How about just getting through the day without feeling like I got to knock fools out or stab them up? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't like feeling like that. You know what I'm saying?
You know what you just said? You know what you just said? I think these are the conversations me and the guys have been having for the past 2 weeks, yeah? I said to Zach, keeps sending me these videos, yeah?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? The next spaceship, I'm leaving this Earth, bro. Because I'm done. I'm actually done, man.
Let's go.
And let's peace out, bro. It might even be Leeds, bro. I might even just go to Leeds.
I have a neighbor.
Trust me, man. Like, I'm just thinking people are just wild. They're just wilding out, bro. They're just... It's... I feel like... You know, before, there was a filter. Before the internet, there was a filter. Like, if you were a lunatic here, I wouldn't even find out about you unless I met you in person, right? Now the lunatics that run the internet, man.
Right. And they're just bonkers, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So it's like for me, like, if you ask what I really do like about Leeds, I like the silence, bro. Mm. I like just driving out to somewhere, chilling. That's it. I may or may not do anything. I might meditate. I might do yoga. I might just sit there and read. I like the silence, right? Out here in the Bay, they have this thing called bipping. Bipping.
What's that?
Bipping means that they break the glass on your car. You can come out, like, it's an epidemic. Look up bipping windows in San Francisco. It is a plague. Everybody's car.
Why?
They break them and they raid them because they're just, like, looking for stuff. Because there's so many homeless. There's so many, like, thieves. There's so many young kids who don't have real jobs. And they just go around bipping glass all day.
Yeah. Yeah, about the chocolate. What's all this chocolate on your face?
Chocolate? It's doo-doo, baby.
And it's like, yo, it's like everything, like everybody's like all amped up in America. There's a lot of, especially I think like, not to talk about politics too much, but I think Obama, Trump, and Biden back to back have exhausted American political brains. And they're like, yo, I don't know what's going on. They just want out, right? So I'm like, yo, man, like, I don't even care who wins the next election. I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm out. I don't have time for it. But like, seriously, when I'm in the UK, the stress that I feel being black in America, it is just not existent there.
Yeah.
I know the UK has structural racism. I know that there's still problems, right? And I know that violence, especially with the blades and stuff, is still a really big problem, okay? It does not compare to the violent tension of the Bay Area.
But you I can't. you guys are good.
Car owners in San Francisco are leaving their trunks open to avoid having windows smashed by thieves as crime runs rampant. That's mad.
Okay? So you say, why you want to come here?
Yeah,
that's
why.
Exhibit A.
But Bishop, one thing that America's got, Grey Day racism, man. It's like,
oh, you guys curated it to perfection, my friend.
It's just like that perfectly cooked brisket.
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a delicacy. It's right next to the brisket. Would you like some racism with that brisket? Would you like some slavery and genocide sprinkled on top of that? You know what I'm saying?
But one thing that the one thing that I heard, I mean, I was reading something about sales, a long time ago. And he talked about the difference in psychology between the way Americans sell consumer goods and the way the British, we buy, yeah?
Right.
Now, if you look at American ads and stuff, they say to you, buy this thing. Buy, buy. That's the American kind of model, right?
Right.
and we British people don't like to be told what to do, man. Honestly, bro, like, if you tell me what to do, I'm just going to do the opposite, man. Like, don't tell us what to do, man. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, I'm, this is like the British culture, like, inherently, where I say we, I find it very difficult to use the word British and we in the same sentence because of my experience growing up here. But I can't run away from the fact that I've been brought up here. So when I use the word British, I'm using it loosely because there are some people in society that don't necessarily see me as British. Does that make sense?
Right.
So, but I'm using it more of a cultural thing, yeah?
Right.
So when I started, because we've got a business that we run and stuff like that. So when we go on the internet to kind of look at ways of selling and stuff, and I was like, oh my God, that's so true. Because when we got cable around here, and sometimes you get, you know, American channels and
you get the ads, right?
Rude boy. You know that your ads are they're too loud, man.
Yo, do you know that they turn up the volume 30% from the regular TV?
Are you serious? Buff, it's too loud, man. Yeah. Why are you shouting?
That's the thing though. No, because the thing is if you look at the average TV show, when the ad comes on, it's 30% higher. That's
I did not know that.
Yeah, bro. There's a really deep thing called Century of the Self. It's a very long documentary about the history of the psychology of public relations and marketing and what American companies did to get into the minds of American people to make them buy things that they didn't need. Century of the Self. You'll thank me.
I'll watch it.
Unbelievable. Definitely. I used to be in public relations. That's how I know a lot of this stuff.
Right. Okay.
I used to work in marketing in Silicon Valley, so I know
everything.
A lot.
Everything is branded. Everything has to have like a company attached to it, or this brought to you by this. This brought to you by that.
Everything.
Even in local businesses and local stuff, like you got a local business that would sponsor, which is good at grassroots level, but when you got corporate America doing the same thing at it's a lot.
Dude,
it's a lot.
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. And so, you know, this is why though too that I love jiu-jitsu, right? I remember training at Charles's back in the day, and there used to be a guy named Evan. Evan was a purple belt when I was a white belt and before I was getting my blue. And so Charles took a really long time to give me my blue belt. And what happened is it made me an axe murderer. Like it would dishearten most people.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, you're not gonna give me the belt, hey? And I would just start looking for anybody who had a blue belt. I was trying to kill you so that Charles would give me a belt. So Evan was purple. And on Friday nights in the early days of jiu-jitsu, they were the slowest days because the guys who trained during the week would take Fridays off to go to clubs and be like, yeah, I trained jiu-jitsu with Charles Gracie. You can see the shirt. I'm cool. Yeah, right? But I was already married with kids. I didn't care. I'm going to train. Evan was the same way. And me and Evan would have epic battles Friday nights, right? Because there's barely anybody on the mat. So I remember this time I'm going toe-to-toe with Evan. Sometimes he would kill me. Sometimes I would kill him. And I remember being supremely present in the middle of the roll. And I remember time stopping. And I remember coming out of that situation being like, wow, for those 3 seconds, right? Like bills didn't matter, wife and kid drama. Did I put the cap on the toothpaste? None of that matters. Fully present, right? And I was like, I wonder if I could bring 3 seconds of that presence into my workday, if I could bring 3 seconds of that presence into my, you know, conversations with people I love and things like that, like what could that be like? And that's when I started really recognizing some of the deeper benefits of jiu-jitsu, right? That forced presence, because you can't think about nothing else when some dude's trying to kill you. You can't think about nothing else when someone's about to shoot on your legs and you got to have your hips ready to, you know what I'm saying? Like you got to have all this stuff, right? And so, you know, that presence and the pursuit of that presence in more places than the mat is what I found like supremely enriching. And again, on these things, and I'm sure you've had these conversations, you know, when you're rolling with people that are white, black, Asian, you know, Russian, Nigerian, Muslim, atheist. You're coming across all these people who are all making you better. They're all making you better, right? So, you know, like, if someone throws you a, you know, I remember training with Dave Camrio a long time ago when I was still, you know, I used to be very hard left and very militant. You know what I'm saying? Speaking of extremes, right? This was a way that I lived a large part of my life. And I don't regret it, but I'm just saying I was hard left and really militant, right? And so I remember learning from Dave Camrio one day, and he was trying to show me how to do my arm bars better. And I remember watching him, like I'm watching him do the move. And I'm like, we're so different. You know what I mean? As human beings. And he's showing me how to get this arm bar better. And I was thinking, that's like a life raft. Like, imagine if you were drowning and someone threw you a life raft, like a you know, and then someone said, grab it. Would you be like, you voted for Trump? Or would you be like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. I don't take life rafts from Christians. You know what I'm saying? Right?
Oh, you that's so
you,
true.
You grab that thing and you're grateful. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And I was like, yo, this dude's helping me save my life. He's helping me save the lives of people that I care about. And he's totally different from me. Hmm. You know what I mean? That's a beautiful thing. And he's not teaching it to me with any assurance of being like him, right? Like, he's not teaching me this because he wants me to be like, he's teaching me like this because this is what the art is. This is what the art does. This is how it makes me better. And he's showing it to me. And so I started paying real close attention to that, to Hal, to Kurt, to Gumby, to Scotty, people who didn't pray like me, didn't eat like me. They were very different, but they were enriching me. And my only job really was to take it in and enrich others with the same guarantee. You don't have to be Muslim like me. You don't have to pray like me. You don't have to meditate like me. These are just things that I do, things that enrich me, and that's cool. You see what I'm saying? And like, man, it's just been such a gift for my life. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, like I said, I'm 52. When I was young and I started, I was never a big dude. I was never a tough dude. I was never known to be a fighter or anything like that. And sometimes people in my family or friends from high school who knew me when I was hella small and like not really doing nothing, they were like, damn, you must be getting your ass whooped all the time. You know what I'm saying? Or like, damn, you probably sucked or whatever. And I probably did, right? But now I'm much healthier and happier than they appear to be, most of them overall. And I know it's because of jiu-jitsu. I can't imagine how out of shape I would be without jiu-jitsu and Islam. I can't imagine if I'd even be alive without jiu-jitsu and Islam. I think coming into Islam, taking shahada, and then finding jiu-jitsu and choosing to stay with it were two of some of the greatest choices I've ever made in the history of my life. I can't think of two decisions that have benefited me more. I can't think of them. Hip hop included, which did a lot for me. I mean, I wrote forever. You know what I'm saying? So it's deep, bro.
That was beautiful, man. You took me somewhere, man. Mentally, bro. I went somewhere.
It's true, though, bro.
But you know what you said? You know what I mean? That I identify a lot with what you said about when you're rolling, you're not thinking about anything else. And I suffer from overthinking all the time, man. Like. And the anxiety of the future always, because we're living in a time where everything moves so quickly and you're always anticipating something, right? But training, normally Salah should actually be doing that for us, you know, and sometimes you can use that combining Salah and training again, if you train with the right intention, that is worship in itself, you know?
Totally. So
what you said about that bit, and I think for me that's something I have to work on in my training, you know. So like, I'm not gonna lie to you, but I'm gonna put my hands up, yeah, I don't like training,
right?
And I tell you why I'm saying it, like I'm telling you this because I feel like people that are listening thinking that, you know, I run a gym, I train jiu-jitsu, I train wrestling, all this stuff, yeah, but I don't like it. It's not that I don't like it because I don't like the art. I love jiu-jitsu, I love wrestling. It's not that. I don't like the anxiety that I get from going into it. Does that make sense?
Bro,
that's all it is.
Bro,
And if I'm really true to myself, that is the reality. And I know there's a lot of people out there that I don't want to go and train because they feel this way. Maybe they've never trained in their life. Yeah. And that anxiety sometimes doesn't go. And I think
it's true.
It stays with you. But when you start to roll or you start to train, that goes immediately. It's just the anticipation of going to battle.
Totally. No, that's the thing. And like the Stoics often talk about a lot about how, like, a lot of times the way that you imagine things are bad is worse than how it actually is when you do it. 100%. You know what I mean? And jiu-jitsu is like that a lot. I can't tell you how many times you've been sitting out in front of heroes. It's cold as hell outside. I know there's a dude in there that's a mass murderer who I'm trying to kill, but he's killing me all the time. You know what I mean? And I don't want to get murked and it's cold, right? But then, man, when I walk out steaming, you know what I mean? From all, I just feel fantastic and I'm grateful for him. You know, there's a thing, one of the recent videos I made about jiu-jitsu is, you know, I talked about the best way to end class. And so at the end of every class that I do, every class, every student, everybody knows that I'm like this. I tell him, Jigoro Kano, the founder of judo, right? He said that you bow to thank your opponent for improving you. And I found this to be supremely powerful because there was a dude I knew who was always like, I don't like bowing. Bowing to people is stupid. I'm not submitting to any other person. And I was like, I don't really think it's like, I didn't know that quote at the time, but I was like, I don't think that has anything. I don't feel like I'm submitting to someone when I bow. I was like, I'm just saying, like, whatever. And when I realized this, I was like, man, like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Muhammad Ali, whoever your favorite wrestler is, like Alexander Karelin. I don't know, you know, if you know the Russians, Karelin, right? Right. Kale Sanderson, you know, these are dudes who inspired me. You know what I'm saying? Annie Gracie, whoever fought, right? What you see is that person, when you see them do a thing, like you see Jordan do some crazy dunk or whatever, they're only responding to the amount of pressure put on them by their opponent. Okay. Right. So when I finish training, I can't armbar myself. I can't choke myself. I can't footlock myself, right? I can't sprawl. You know what I'm saying? Right? I can't shoot, right? I need you there to help me get better. And so at the end of the day, I say, at the end of every class, thank you for improving me. And I shake every student's hand. I say, thank you for improving me. And they shake each other's hands. Thank you for improving me. Because it's not a fight. We're not going to the death. This is us trying to learn to be better. That's it. We're here to try to learn to be better. So all of my students say, thank you for improving me. It's the best way to end class because we can make a lot of these anxieties up before we go in, when we're at home. But the reality is every day we train, whether we feel it or not, you can get murdered every role and you are better. You could fail every submission attempt and you are better. Or you could have won every role and you are better, right? But it's incremental and it doesn't always feel that way. It doesn't always feel good when you come out and you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, my arm, dog, I can't really move it well. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you can't move it well. But this is what walking the path does for you, right? Because at the end of the day, the strength, the flexibility, your technical understanding, your cognitive understanding has been enriched and you're better every day you train, even when you're getting murked, you know? And so, you know, having gratitude for your training partners matters, you know? And I think that one of the things that I recognize the most is when I've been inconsistent in my training, I didn't realize how much I was hurting my training partners because I was being selfish. Right. Because I was too busy because I'm not going to go in today. Man, you're not helping your boy get better. You know what I mean? So sometimes I show up knowing I'm going to get dragged just so they can work on their stuff. Yeah. You know?
Bishop, I think we're going to end it there, man. That's a beautiful way to end. And I appreciate you taking your time. Yeah, you too, man. Thank you for improving me, man. And have one of those burritos for me, man.
Barbaquitos.
What's it called? Barbaquitos, yeah.
It's called a barbaquito. It's like a burrito that's barbecue.
Okay, you know right. Yeah, so have one of those for me.
There's mac and cheese in the barbaquito.
Now, you're making me jealous now, man.
I think I might go get one and just take a picture and be like...
Yeah, do it. All right, do it. Take a picture and tag us in it. Inshallah, enjoy it, man.
Yo, thank you so much. Hopefully when I come down, you know, next time, we can make some time to train and do some stuff.
Yeah,
I'm definitely looking to do seminars in and around the UK as much as I can. I'm always looking for a reason to be out there and enrich people.
When you're here next.
So yeah, I appreciate you.
When you're here next?
I don't know. I'm hoping to be out there around Christmas time, or maybe, you know, top of the year. You know what I'm saying?
Inshallah. If you are down, definitely want to meet you in person, inshallah, bro. It'd be good.
For sure, man. For sure. It would be an honor, man. It would be an honor. But thank you so much. And again, anybody wants to holler at your boy, hit me at Bishop Chronicles on Instagram or on TikTok. I'm always posting about jujitsu, stoicism, and meditation. And I'm always down to build with anybody.
Barakallahu fiqh. And on that note, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and we'll see you on the next one.